Mr. Dan.
Talking about my generation.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder, and I have three guests this morning. We have three lovely ladies from the Quilt Guild, and we're going to be talking about the quilt show that's coming up in April. So my guests are Christine Kamen, Elizabeth Tully, and Lorraine Vedder. And yes, for those who are listening to the show, there's more than a coincidence that Lorraine has the same last name as me. So anyway, good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so let's start talking quickly about the quilt show that you have upcoming. What are the dates for this?
Well, it's Friday, April 12th, and Saturday, April 13th. Coming up soon. The hours are from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And
where
is it?
It's at the Presbyterian Church of Chestertown, which is on right off of Route 20, across from
Redner's.
Route 213. 213.
Of 213.
Course. I'm sorry, it's right across from 213, across from Redner's, and it's on Gateway Drive. The address is 905 Gateway Drive in Chestertown.
Are there fees?
Yes, it's $8 per person, and it's good for 2 days, and there's a maximum of $25 for our entire family, and children get in free.
All right, so in general, what can a visitor expect to see? You don't have to go into details right now. We're going to talk more about the details a little bit later, but you know, are they seeing quilts? Are they seeing cloth? Are they seeing sewing machines?
As of right now, we have about 100 quilts registered, plus a number of quilts that will be donated to various charities, and a special exhibit of quilts from a WPA project, which we'll probably describe later. And they'll also see a fantastic market where you can buy quilted items and fabrics and craft items. It should be a lovely, lovely full event.
Mm-hmm. All right, so before we go into details, I wanted to talk a little bit about each of the three-year background when it comes to quilting, because it's my understanding that there are a variety of different types of quilts. And I also seem to be under the impression that quilting is quite popular these days. So how did each of you get involved? You want to start one at a time?
I started out by always loving fabric arts. I actually went to college for a textile science degree, and I didn't stay with it, but I should have. And I started quilting the old-fashioned way of cutting out cardboard templates and doing everything by hand. I soon moved into the more modern way of using a rotary cutter, which is like a pizza cutter for fabric, and cutting pieces much more efficiently, and I am now obsessed with quilting, and I do all kinds of quilting. I do almost everything by machine, and I love to do what's called improvisational quilting, which is without traditional patterns.
Okay. And Elizabeth?
Christine is being modest. She is a true artist who exhibits and sells her work at River Arts. And I'm Elizabeth Tully. I was in 4-H as a child, and my grandmother taught me how to sew. Growing up, I made a good many of my own clothes. And as a young mother in the 70s and early 80s, I started making quilts. It was a time when it was very hard to find fabric. Not like today, where you can walk into a quilt shop and have a whole wall of color-coordinated, beautiful fabrics. Back when I was quilting, it was really an adventure trying to find fabrics for your quilts. But I enjoyed it. But life intervened, and I took a few decades off to raise my family and to work, and didn't get back into quilting until I retired and moved to Chestertown in 2015. Joined the guild, realized that everything I thought about, that I knew about quilting, was out of date. And since then, I have been learning from my wonderful colleagues in the guild.
All right, and Lorraine.
My name is Lorraine. I'm new to quilting, relatively. I grew up sewing with my mother showing me. I made my own clothes. Was always interested in anything having to do with textile. I knit, I crochet, but I didn't quilt until 2017, when I became seriously ill. And I felt that I wanted to leave a part of myself for my family. And I thought that making quilts for them, for people in my family, for my grandchildren, my children, would be a good way to leave a part of myself. I don't know my mother-in-law. She died before I met, you know, before I met her. And I do know her creative arts that she's done. I do know the embroidery that she's done. And I wanted to leave a part of myself for future generations. I like modern quilting. I like working with solid color fabrics. I retired and moved to Chestertown and discovered the Quilt Guild, and they were my tribe. I just felt like what a creative, wonderful group of people who are helpful, and I'm learning something every day from them.
All right, so I'm a little bit curious about the origin of quilting, because it sounds to me like the quilts that you make today are very often made from scrap fabrics that you have sort of just laying around. And I wonder, did quilting become a thing because people were trying to salvage some of the cloth that was difficult to get years ago? For example, if you had a shirt that you simply couldn't wear as a shirt anymore, but it could be cut into small squares or triangles or anything and sewn together, is that sort of the origin of quilting?
Originally, I would say quilting in America was a very practical endeavor. Scraps were cut from clothing that could no longer be worn because that's all the fabric they had. As women and families became more affluent, they were able to import fabrics from England and use fancy fabrics and make fancier type of quilts. And for a while, quilts that were really, really beautiful were packed away and brought out on Sunday afternoons to show other people. But the more practical everyday quilts were simply made and used hard because that's how people did it. And then when time went on and women had more time on their hands, there were things called crazy quilts, which were made out of very luxurious fabrics. And they were used because women were supposed to sit around and embroider because they had lots of servants and slaves to do the hard work. So they were very fancy. They weren't very practical.
Another interesting thread in the history of quilting is that sometimes messages were embedded in quilts and used as wayfaring directions on the Underground Railroad, for instance.
Really? I didn't know that. Well, that would be interesting. And so I guess I would... how would they do that with a message?
Well,
do you have any idea?
There were messages that indicated north. There were symbols that indicated safe houses.
Right.
So people would pass along this information, and it would help guide escaped slaves to freedom.
Also, there might be a house that was known to be on the Underground Railroad route. And if a quilt was hanging out on the banister, that meant it was safe to go in there.
Okay.
If there wasn't a quilt, it meant keep on going, don't stop here, something's happening.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's a lot of symbolism that is embedded in quilts.
Well, I know in particular you have the Morse code type quilts, right?
Yeah.
And that's a style, I would imagine. Is that what it would be called?
I'm working on a Morse code quilt right now, and I've actually taken the Morse code for the letters peace and written in Morse code peace and made it into a quilt. Yeah, there's a lot of different.
Another thing, quilts were sometimes used as fundraisers where people would sign a quilt maybe during a World War One or Two. If you signed your name on a quilt, you paid money to do that, and that money was raised for a good cause, whether Red Cross. Quilts were signed and maybe sent out west with somebody. You know, friendship quilt as a memory of this person who was going west forever.
And then quilts, I would imagine, were probably more practical at one point, too, right? Did they people actually use them as blankets or bed coverings?
Absolutely.
Right, I know today quilts are more, well, I guess you can make a quilt and still use it as a bed covering.
Sure.
But quilts are more often displayed today rather than just used.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people put them on their beds.
Right.
And I do, but I can't say that we have a couch or a chair in our house that doesn't have a quilt draped over it. And if there's a wall space, there's a quilt on it. At one point, we talked about hanging quilts on our ceiling.
You run out of beds after a while if you're an avid quilter, and then you have to go to the walls.
Well, I have noticed that because I'm married to an avid quilter, and we're starting to accumulate some quilts right now.
Right.
And we have quilts for every
table
season.
Table runners. Every table has a quilt.
There are many, many quilted table runners in our house. We could have tables being quilted forever. All right, so there is some history to it, and there is an interesting background and backstop. I was very fascinated about what you were talking about with the Underground Railroad. That makes a lot of sense. It was a great way to pass on messages that were sort of clandestine, and obviously it worked at that point. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a short break right now. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back. Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guests this morning are Christine Kamen, Elizabeth Tully, and Lorraine Vetter of the Old Kent Quilt Guild. And we were talking a little bit about the quilt show that's upcoming, and we'll talk a little bit about more of that as we go on. But one of the things that kept coming up in conversation in that first section was the Quilt Guild, and that's the Old Kent County Quilt Guild. And I want to talk a little bit about how that works. Is it a nonprofit organization? Does it have a president? Does it have a board? Does it have a spot that it meets, specific times? Some of the details of what's going on with that.
Okay, the Quilt Guild meets at the Presbyterian Church in Downingtown. It's right on Route 213, just north of the Redner Shopping Center. And we meet the third Tuesday of every month, except December. We meet generally 6 to 6:30 and stay till about 8:30, except in the winter, January, February, March, we meet in the afternoon just to make it a more daylight drive for the people. And we have about 80 members, and we've been around for, I'm not sure, 35 years, something like that.
I think, 30.
Yeah, 30 years.
Maybe
30 years.
To 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1995.
Okay.
Was founded.
Yes, yeah, so we're going into
30.
Yeah. And we, like I said, we have 80-some members, mostly women, but we have one man who's a gem. He's 90, and he does a ton of work for us. And occasionally we've had other gentlemen join
as
us.
As well as making beautiful quilts.
Oh, yes, he makes amazing engineered quilts, I would say.
Yeah.
And we have a president and a program chairperson who helps to schedule guest speakers. We do workshops. Of course, we have a treasurer because money comes in and money has to go out. And we have a board that meets periodically and generally a good working group of people. Yeah, this working group is all coming together for the quilt show again, April 12th and 13th.
And Christine mentioned the meeting dates are on Tuesday, followed on Wednesday every month by a program of some kind. Four or five times a year, the programs feature nationally known quilt educators who come to teach a particular technique or demonstrate a type of quilting. These workshops can be half day, full day, and they are by subscription. The Guild members who wish to take the workshop sign up and pay a fee for that. And sometimes the workshops feature our own members, the Guild's own members, who are very talented, like Christine Kamen has been a featured Wednesday presenter.
So what do you do at a normal meeting? Do you bring sewing machines and actually do quilting at these
meetings? At a normal meeting, we generally have a featured speaker, whether it's a member of the Quilt Guild, or as Elizabeth said, speakers that we have, national speakers that come and discuss a particular type of quilt that they make that they're interested in. And then we always have a show and tell, which is amazing to see how creative these people are that are in the Quilt Guild. And then it's followed by a workshop the following day where we try out the technique that the speaker taught us about the day before, or we try a different technique.
So that would be a day that you'd actually bring your sewing machines if you could.
Yes.
All right, so we actually do that. All right, so you mentioned something about types, which is kind of leads us into where I wanted to go next. Because I know there's a variety of different types of quilts, and there are certain types of quilts that are sort of universal, so that if you're living in Chestertown and you mention this type of quilt to somebody who's living on the West Coast, they would know right away what you're talking about. So I know a couple of them are a flying geese pattern, and there's a type of star pattern. There may be multiple star patterns, but can you explain a little bit about what that means?
You're talking about quilts made from traditional blocks. And yes, these blocks, there are many of them, Larry, are known internationally to quilters. If you mention Bear Claw,
right, Log Cabin.
Log Cabin, quilters across the country will know what you mean. Those are traditional quilts, and then there are modern quilts, which might feature some of those blocks or a variation on the blocks or a complete improvisation. There are story quilts that are meant to be representative of something.
Applique quilts are not those traditional blocks you're talking about, like Flying Geese, Log Cabin, right. Ohio Star, right. Road to California, which probably was developed when the pioneers were going out west. But there, it's one layer of fabric put on top of another layer of fabric, which if it's a flower or a shape that's hard to dissect, it's just another way of making a quilt.
And they have
a totally different feel. There are equally beautiful.
There are landscape quilts. Members will drive along and see a beautiful scene of the farmlands, the river, a particular tree, and they will then sketch it and bring it home and make a quilt of that landscape that they're looking at.
Now, I have seen some quilts that actually do almost look like a painting, where I remember seeing at the last quilt show there was something with a variety of different types of ducks that somebody put together, and I looked at them, and when you look at it closely, it looks like each individual piece is cut out to its own specific shape, and then they're sewn adjacent to each other, which I was amazed when I saw that. I would just think that you would take a basic piece of cloth shaped like a duck, and then if you want to put wings on it, you just cut out a wing and just sew it to the top, and then just sew it at the top again and again and again. But that's not exactly how you do that, right? You really cut them so that they're adjacent to each other, which sounds
The quilt you're
tough.
Talking about, I know which one you're talking about, was done by a group of women in our guild, and that was an applique quilt, and each person made one block of a specific bird that's in our area. Mm-hmm. And right, they take tiny little pieces of fabric and make all the gradations of what makes it look almost realistic. Mm-hmm. Another thing I'd like to do is to buy a piece of fabric that has that great blue heron or the duck printed on it,
right.
Already nicely done, very professional, and I add borders to it, and then I machine quilt it and give it that third dimension that mm-hmm. people will look at it and they'll assume I took all those little pieces of fabric and colors and did it the very, very hard way. And no, I did it
but you
a much
personalize
easier way.
It you take it
yes.
and you personalize it.
Yeah, I make it look very attractive, but I started out with something that was already printed for me.
We should also mention that we have bees, B-E-E's, like an applique bee. These are small groups within the Quilt Guild that meet. We have a hand stitching bee. We have a creativity bee.
Yeah.
And they also meet every month
and
as well.
Modern.
And modern. And a modern quilting bee.
And I think that's a spinoff of the idea of a lot of people assume when we say we're in a quilting guild that we sit together around a big frame and do that right. hand stitching with a little child underneath, pushing the needle back up. they used to be called quilting bees, and we don't do that, but we do call them bees.
Right.
What's the difference between a modern and a traditional quilt?
A modern quilt generally is more simplified pattern. It might be a traditional pattern that's very enlarged and just simplified. It's taking it to this very basic essence design, and it usually is, it's hard to say, it usually could be one or two colors, maybe
yeah.
very stark, solid fabrics, not a lot of prints, not flowers. But it could have a whole rainbow of colors, too. But very often, it's one or two colors.
But mostly, what makes a modern quilt is that there aren't any rules. If you make a traditional quilt, you know what the block's supposed to look like, and that's what you have to do. But in a modern quilt, you're free to express and interpret.
Okay. So when you talk about these different types of block quilts, for example, we mentioned before a log cabin quilt, and you mentioned... Flying geese quilt. So somebody will recognize the pattern right away who knows they're quilting it. So what is the difference, for example, between a log cabin block and a flying goose or geese block?
Well, a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
Totally different lines.
Yeah, a log cabin starts off with a square. Traditionally, it's red to signify fire in the house, a fireplace. And then strips are placed around and around and around this little square to make a bigger square.
Representing the logs of a cabin.
Of a log cabin.
But every, even traditional pattern can be done and tweaked different ways that it might get a new name, but there's just so much variety to,
yeah.
There's books with hundreds and hundreds of patterns in them.
Oh,
I know I have seen photographs of quilts where they would be the same style, for example, the same type of a star style. And depending upon the colors that are used, they look like two entirely different quilts. But if you look at it carefully, you'll see the pattern is there, the geometric shapes, but the colors overall make it look like they're not even related. I find that pretty amazing.
Yeah. One of the exhibits we'll have at the quilt show, it's called a mystery quilt exhibit. Everybody did the same construction. And actually, when you started, you didn't know what the pattern was even going to look like. But the variety of the quilts that were finished is incredible. You would not know that they were all done from the exact same pattern, same size pieces, same everything, and they look so dramatically different. So that will be one big exhibit at the quilt show.
So I'd like to clarify that log cabin is a block, not a quilt.
Right.
And how you arrange the log cabins in the quilt makes up the design. Same thing with flying geese. All of these are blocks, but where they are distinctive is the arrangement of the blocks.
Okay, so the quilt would have multiple of this block.
Yes.
It wouldn't be just one big.
Right.
One big.
However,
block.
If it was a modern quilt,
it could be
a log cabin, it might be one single big log cabin. And big, it could be 18 inches big, it could be 36 inches big, it could be 72 inches big.
All right, we're going to have to take a short break again, but I'd first like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back. Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder. And this morning we have Christine Kamen, Elizabeth Tully, and Lorraine Vedder of the Old Kent Quilt Guild. And we were talking initially briefly about the show that's upcoming, and I'd like to dig a little bit more into that show right now. And I know that you're going to have over 100 quilts, or at least 100 quilts, on display. And I was wondering, where do these quilts come from? Who chooses the ones that are put on display, and are they arranged in specific orders?
All right, when we have the quilt show, when you first walk in, one of the first things you're going to see is our raffle quilt, which is a dynamic and beautiful quilt. And you'll also see the market, and we'll tell you about that in a moment. But then you walk into a big fellowship hall where there will be about 100 quilts in there. Every member is allowed to offer or to enter two different quilts of really any size. They could be large bed quilts, they could be large lap quilts or wall hangings, or they could be small wall hangings or tabletoppers. So we have, the membership has really responded well, and we've got about 100. We have some that are from the Creative Bee that we just mentioned. We've got some from the Modern Bee, and they'll all be hung together because there'll be some cohesiveness. The rest of the quilts, when we hang them, we try to make them look attractive in each little display area. The whole room is filled with large frames that have large white cloths, and then we hang the quilts on those. So they're each little cubby hole, if you want to call it that, is a small little artistic arrangement to begin with. And then Lorraine's going to talk about the WPA quilts in a moment. You'll walk through an area to go into the sanctuary that will display these WPA quilts, and in there will be a large arrangement of our mystery quilts that are all done from the same rules and directions of the same pattern. And then there'll also be a large section of Deborah's Angels quilts, which we'll talk about those later. Those are our charity quilts. So they'll be draped on the pews in the sanctuary.
So I wanted to ask you, while we were talking about the quilts, is that I know we were talking earlier about the different types of blocks and the different types of quilts. Now, when I'm looking at one of these quilts as an amateur, I may not understand what that quilt represents. Is there something that explains it to me on there?
Yes.
And is there somebody around that can talk
every,
about it?
Hopefully we have people, members, floating around that can answer questions, or at least make up a good story for you. And each one will have a card. It'll tell you who made it, maybe a little bit about the hows or why she made it or he made it. And each one will have a colored dot. We've divided the quilts into the large, medium, and small. And everybody who comes has an opportunity to vote for their favorite large, medium, and small quilt. It might not be the best quilt, but it's their favorite quilt. And that your favorite is your favorite.
Okay, and it doesn't have to have a specific reason why it's your favorite.
Nope, it doesn't have to be the best made.
It just catches your eye.
Yep, it's your favorite, and you get to vote.
Now, you mentioned something about WPA quilts. So, Lorraine, can you explain what those are?
So, between 1935 and 1942, when the country was in the midst of a depression, FDR started with what's called the Second New Deal, and he put people to work doing things. WPA is part of that effort to put America back to work, and people were commissioned to make quilts. Then in the Quilt Guild in 2022, led by Elizabeth Teletsky, decided to replicate these quilts, and in a way to honor the artists that made it initially. So what they did was they took these blocks and these quilts and interpreted. There were 13 members that took part of this, and they interpreted it their way and made these beautiful quilts, which is known as the WPA quilts. They toured nationally, and we are fortunate enough that they are going to be on display at the quilt show.
So these are the original WPA quilts created back in the day?
These are not the original. What the members did was interpret the quilts that were done during the WPA era and made it ours.
Do you know if these quilts still exist somewhere, the original ones, or?
I don't know.
Good question, Larry.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if they would be around. I mean, obviously you had some knowledge of what they were. At the very least have pictures of them.
No, we had the patterns. Somehow the patterns were kept, and a group of women in Pennsylvania had them, and that's how Beth was able to access them. She was in that group at one point.
Now, I'm curious if you know or not, you may or may not know the answer to this question, but I know the WPA was designed to put people back to work, and it encompassed a lot of different things, from building roads to building dams mm-hmm. to building housing and all sorts of things. So I was just curious, what did they do with these quilts? Do you have any idea? Were they used in a practical point of view, or so you're not really sure of the history of them?
I don't know, but I'm sure that there will be something written up at the quilt show by Elizabeth. She's very knowledgeable about the history of the WPA quilts.
Okay, so they'll have their own little section.
They will have their own little section, and it's led by Elizabeth Tuletsky.
So, Larry, if you come, you'll be able to answer that question then.
Oh. Well, in 2 years, when we interview the next batch of people for the quilt show, I'll know the answer to that question.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for that one, right. All right, and then so are there prizes given out for the quilts? Are they judged in any way?
Just as Christine just said, people are going to vote for their favorite quilt.
Okay. All right, so anybody that comes to visit will look through it and they'll say, I like this quilt and I like this quilt.
Right.
So they're getting up to, I guess there's probably more than one you vote for.
And it's up to interpretation, whether or not somebody looks at the technique and the style or the colors, or it's just that they like it.
Okay. And then you have a market along with this too, right?
We do have a market.
And what's in the market?
And in fact, the market is a real draw of people to the show. Other quilters from all over the Eastern Shore and from Pennsylvania come to the market because quilters like to look at what other quilters make. And they like to purchase gifts and notions and, as Christine said earlier, fabric. So what is in the market is donated by the members of our guild. Each guild member is asked to donate two items with a total sales price of around $20. And so that brings in a lot of items. But in addition, we have many members of our guild who consign items to the market. They make different things, quilts, table runners, placemats, small craft bags, or put together baskets of notions, whatever. The consigners then bring those items to the market to sell, and the proceeds are split between the guild and the consigner.
Oh, so potentially you could purchase a quilt if you wanted to.
You absolutely can purchase a quilt. There might be some quilts for sale in the quilt show.
I think there's probably about five for sale.
And then there almost always are quilts for sale in the market.
They tend to be smaller items in the market, just space. We don't have room to display a lot of bed quilts in the marketplace.
Mm. Now, I was going to ask you what happens with the proceeds, but I'm beginning to kind of figure that out myself already. You mentioned that you have hangers for all of these quilts. I imagine they cost money to keep and to replace and buy in the first place. You need to buy space, you rent space, then you hire and you bring in guests to speak.
Speakers.
So that's where the proceeds all go to.
Right. And we need materials for the charitable work that the organization does.
That's what I wanted to ask next. I know that you had mentioned earlier Deborah's Angels, and I know that's one charitable thing you do. Are there others as well? And can you explain what Deborah's Angels is?
Deborah's Angels started
years ago.
Probably by somebody named Deborah.
Honor Deborah, who was a young teacher who passed away of cancer.
Okay.
And her mother was a quilter, and her quilter friend said, let's make quilts. She taught elementary school, and so originally they made baby quilts. And over the years, it has grown and changed, but it's a very active activity in our guild. And every year we donate a couple hundred small quilts for children. We donate to the Department of of family and social services. We've donated to the hospital, the children's hospital.
Yeah, in DuPont Hospital.
DuPont Hospital, to Compass Hospice. We have, for the past several years, donated a large number, 75 or so quilts, to Compass's bereavement camp, which they put on in the summer for young people who have lost a loved one, come together for an amount of time, and each of those campers receives a quilt to take with them.
All right, we're going to take a break, and I'd like to continue this conversation, though, after the break about the charitable events. But first, we'll take the short break. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back. Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guests this morning are Christine Kamen, Elizabeth Tully, and Lorraine Vetter of the Old Kent Quilt Guild. And we've been talking a lot about different types of quilts before the break. And I'd like to continue a little bit about that because it does relate to the quilt show that is upcoming, because many of these are going to be on display. But to get started in this section, I'd like to talk about, you have a quilt that you mentioned is going to be raffled. So where does this quilt come from, and when is it going to be raffled off?
Okay, so the quilt that we're raffling off this year is one that several Quilt Guild members have worked on. The name of it is Bay Lilies, and it is based on a pattern called Celestial Gardens by Derek Lockwood. It's a star in the center. However, the star has 36 different shades of blue in it. It is magnificent. We're raffling this quilt off for $1 a raffle and six for $5. And
this size.
It's a queen size quilt, yeah.
And you can get tickets at the quilt show, but you could also get them usually on a first Friday.
Right.
And sometimes at other special events around the community, such as there's a Rock Hall Day in the fall. Sometimes there's a Galena Dogwood Festival. So if we have a place to raffle it,
we sell
the raffle tickets. We actually draw them in
November 19th is when the drawing is.
That's when it's in November.
Yes.
Okay.
We've already started on the next year.
The next quilt already?
Yeah.
So this is something that's done all the time. Oh,
every
so you
year.
Do this annually.
Every year.
Right.
Every
and
year.
It's always a group event where
yes.
you have several quilters getting together and put
yep.
this together.
Yep.
But the quilt show is biannual. So we will not have it again until 2026.
Okay. All right. So every other year is the quilt show, but the raffle quilt is done annually. I really wanted to continue a little bit more on the conversation of types of quilts, because I'm kind of fascinated by the artwork that gets involved in it. I guess it's easy to think that a quilt has a practical use. It keeps me warm in the winter when it's cold, and that's it. But it's a lot more than that. And I know we alluded to some of it before, the different types of blocks we talked about that are in there that are sort of consistent. And we also talked about the more modern quilts, and I know that they're a little bit different very often. And I know we talked about the Morse code quilt, which actually has a specific message that you can put out in basically Morse code blocks, dots and dashes, and you can basically put any kind of message in there. So, but I understand that there are other ways of doing this, and it's all artistic. I know that we talked about that sound quilt off the air. Could you talk a little bit more about that now?
Everybody has a wave when they speak, sound waves, and people record different messages, whether it's I love you, it has a particular sound wave when somebody says it. They then take this sound wave and make a quilt out of it based on the sound wave.
So I know typically a sound wave would be a bunch of V's upside down and back and forth, or going up and down. So would somebody actually cut individual strips that look like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds like it would take forever.
Quilting is not for sissies.
Yeah, and there's an efficient way to do almost everything, but not everything. When Lorraine mentioned that sound wave, it reminded me of a quilt that's popular with a lot of people. It's called a temperature quilt. Mm-hmm. And they take the temperature outside every day at a certain time, and they have, in the beginning of the year, they code it to, you know, 30 degrees or would be a certain blue, and then up to, you know, through the warmer temperatures and up until, you know, a 90 degree might be a certain color of red. And they make a square or rectangle representing every day, and they sew them in order, in rows. And hopefully they pick some pretty colors, and you'll find out at the end
what your
year looked like from a temperature standpoint.
It can signify somebody's first year of life. You have a child in your family, and you make a quilt based on when they were born, and every day is represented by a color based on what the temperature is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So those are story quilts. An awful lot of quilts tell a story. I would put t-shirt quilts in that same category, because t-shirt quilts are made from accumulated t-shirts that, say, a child has growing up through all his or her various sports teams and activities. And those t-shirts are cut, blocks are created and assembled together to make a beautiful representation of that child's experiences.
Right, and they could be almost anything, because I know that Lorraine made me a quilt out of my t-shirts from my motorcycle days. And I have a whole variety of them. So it could be almost anything.
Yeah,
it could
almost
be different
anything
sports teams. It could be anything that you can buy a t-shirt for, which is just about anything these days anyway.
I was asked to one time make a quilt, and I actually used it as my wedding gift for a couple, using their clothing from when they were small children. And that was a hard assignment, I must say, because their clothing, you know, was different types of fabrics, you know, knits and all, but it worked.
Yeah.
Now, one of you, and I forget which one of you, had mentioned the term memory quilt. What is that?
Well, I would say what I just mentioned, that
would be a memory quilt.
Using those.
So taking something from the past and putting it together. Just sort of to remind you of a particular period in your life.
Yeah. You know, I've seen a magnificent quilt made out of someone's wedding dress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using that primary fabric. It was a very, very white quilt. But, you know, you can take anything that you have that you want to use, remember it, but you can't use it as the clothing item that it originally was.
Or to commemorate somebody in your family who's died.
Okay.
And you can take if it was a man who wore ties, you could take his ties and incorporate it into a quilt. Or shirts that they've worn.
Okay.
One of the items we're going to have in the market are some little silk tie handbags made out of...
out of old ties.
Out of old ties.
Yeah.
Not that they're old, but they're no longer being worn.
Used ties.
Yes, yes.
Gently used ties.
Yeah. Another thing people do is take photographs and print them on fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Those together for usually not a bed quilt, but a lap quilt or a wall hanging. And that's a real nice way to commemorate.
I have seen that. That was pretty fascinating that you printed on a piece of cloth and then incorporated it in a quilt.
We actually have one.
Right.
I mentioned earlier about using signature quilts to raise money for causes like the, you know, Red Cross or something. But one thing, and I've done this several times for a wedding, is made a quilt with blank white spaces. And the guests come and sign the quilt, mm-hmm. as opposed to signing a guest book. And then they can hang that on the wall or put it on their chair as a wrap and be hugged by all the people that came to your wedding.
One item that I find really fascinating is I know that one of the astronauts that stayed on the International Space Station for a time period took many, many photographs of planet Earth while she was up there. And it turns out that she was an avid quilter, and she commissioned someone to actually print out cloth with these photographs on there. So, and I've seen some of this cloth, and it was fascinating. And I know that Lorraine had mentioned her peace quilt earlier that she was making, and it's sort of a peace on Earth because she used pictures. She used sections of the that cloth fabric. To exactly that fabric to make the sign itself. And I thought that was very, very clever. Now, is this a sort of a standalone thing, or are other people doing specific types of cloths like this, designed for quilters?
I'm only familiar with Karen Nyberg is the astronaut, and she transferred the images that she took from the space station into cloth. She contacted Robert Kaufman, who designs fabric, and he came up with a fabric line called Earth Views. And
So that's the only one.
But there are fabric lines.
There are, okay. There,
so that you can buy particular fabrics from a collection made by a certain designer.
Right. And there's everything. Everything under the sun is out there. The choices are incredible.
Right? Spoonflower will take images that you like.
Now you can even get your own things printed with a specific company.
So we really have just a couple of minutes left in the show, so I wanted to talk about, briefly, I'm a guy that knows nothing about sewing. What if all of a sudden I wanted to become a quilter, or say I'm a young person that really doesn't know much about and wants to become a quilter? Do you have an avenue of which I could come to your group and learn, or is that something that I would have to find someplace else to learn and come with my own skills?
You should take this, Lorraine, because I think you experienced it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I knew how to use a sewing machine, but I really did not know any of the techniques for quilting, and I learned it. I took a basic class, but I learned a lot from the Quilt Guild, going to these workshops. People in the Quilt Guild, you just have to throw out a question about how to do a particular type of a quilt, and everybody is so passionate about it that they will willingly help.
Okay. So even though there's no formal class that you have in there, you're almost getting an education by just attending the meetings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, now, does that happen often? Do you get young kids in there once in a while?
Not young kids, but we get people who are new to it, but we are not providing the absolute basic beginning story for everybody. But there's online classes. There aren't as many quilt guilds around here that people can access basic quilting techniques. But with online, you can learn the basic techniques, and then we teach the more special techniques.
And I think actually Deborah's Angels could take somebody who only knows how to do straight seams and give them a real grounding in how to make quilts.
I think so too.
Because the Deborah's Angels workshops have kitted projects that people can work on and people there to help.
Okay. Well, that was a very interesting talk this morning. Thank you to all three of you for being my guests this morning. I really appreciate your time here today. I'd also like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. This is 106.9 WCTR, and if it's Sunday morning, you've been listening to My Generation.